This is The Guardian.
Today, Gaza is on the edge of a famine. So why is less food getting in than ever before?
Today in Focus is supported by Rainforest Trust. In honour of this year's Earth Day, we're promoting Rainforest Trust's Brazilian Amazon Fund throughout April. Rainforest Trust is a 501c3 organisation, which means that 100% of all money donated goes directly to conservation efforts. The fund has already helped protect more than 6.5 million acres of rainforest habitat, but Rainforest Trust still needs to protect a further 13 million acres to reach its goal. You can help. Donate online at rainforesttrust.org/earthday this April, and your generous gift will be quadruple matched for the Brazilian Amazon.
The film released by the Israel Defense Forces is black and white. This silent, blurry footage, edited before release, shot from a drone, hovering in the dark sky above the scene unfolding below. Hundreds of people crowding a line of trucks, a private convoy delivering food to northern Gaza. At one point, the people start to panic, rushing in all directions. Israel says this was the beginning of a stampede that led to the deaths of more than 100 people. That's one perspective. Video footage captured by Al Jazeera from on the ground shows another. It's noisy and chaotic. You can clearly hear these rounds of gunfire as people panic and flee. Red bursts of tracer fire light up the sky, while desperate people still grab at sacks of flour. Afterwards, footage from that same area shows injured men being taken away on makeshift stretchers. Palestinian medics said later they were treating stampede injuries, but mainly they were treating gunshot wounds. The events of that chaotic early morning led to 112 deaths, according to Palestinian health officials, and more than 700 injuries. It's drawn attention to the atrocious levels of hunger in Gaza, and among Israel's allies, rare expressions of concern. As people in the territory creep closer to starvation, will it change anything on the ground? From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in Focus: a hunger emergency in Gaza. Patrick Wintour, you're The Guardian's diplomatic editor, and it's now several days from that incident in northern Gaza. How clear is the picture now of what happened and who was responsible?
Well, I think the wider context is clear, but the absolute incidents themselves, there's still controversy around, and I guess the controversy centres on one particular issue, which is the degree to which those people that crowded around the aid convoys in northern Gaza, the extent to which they were trampled to death as the whole distribution of the aid became chaotic and dangerous. So that's one possible explanation. And the second is that they were actually shot by Israeli soldiers who themselves were panicking or acted in other motives.
A journalist told the BBC that Israeli tanks opened fire on a crowd who'd come to collect supplies. A large number of people had been gathered waiting for food when the incident happened.
There's obviously conflicting accounts. There's the account that's been given by the Israeli army, which is the majority of those that died were trampled to death, and they've produced some footage.
As you can see in this video, the tanks that were there to secure the convoy sees the Gazans being trampled and cautiously tries to disperse the mob with a few warning shots. When the hundreds became thousands and things got out of hand, the tank commander decided to retreat.
I think the footage is weakened in its value because it's clearly been edited. And then the second set of accounts is really coming from doctors in hospitals who are saying that the vast, vast majority of people who were coming into the hospitals had suffered gunshot wounds. And some of these doctors, which are relatively senior, but obviously their veracity can't be absolutely vouched for, say that more than 100 had been shot.
After they stopped shooting, we went back to get our aid. By the time I got flour and some canned goods and took it down from the truck, they shot at us. They shot me and the truck driver left and ran over my leg. I lost my nerves. If you want to get us aid this way, then you might as well not bring anything.
Now, I think gradually the balance of argument is going towards those saying that the majority of those people who died were shot rather than trampled upon. But one of the difficulties is the Israeli Defense Forces are continuing to mount their investigation and haven't completed it. And there have been calls from France, Germany, and other European countries that there be an independent investigation. And I don't think that's going to be allowed. And even so, in the current circumstances, it would be very, very difficult to mount something very convincing or judicial.
I mean, you've talked about the reaction among some European countries. Even by the standards of the past 6 months, this episode is absolutely shocking. Tell me more about the global reaction.
I think there has been it's been a sort of a break point, but another level, I feel like we go around in circles about this issue. The reality is that 100 Palestinians are dying every day, but they're not dying in one single episode. And I guess it's so shocking because it's so symbolic of the desperation and the levels of hunger that there are in northern Gaza. And some people try to give the impression that northern Gaza is sort of thinly populated area, but there are hundreds of thousands of people living there, and they have not seen food convoys from the UN for a month. And there's been these sporadic private sector convoys. There's no systematic distribution of the food, and the civil orders, in a sense, has broken down in northern Gaza. So I think that's why it's shocking.
When you say it is a breaking point, what do you see that gives you that sense?
I think some of the responses from the European countries to what had happened was, I think, of a different order to what we've seen before.
Vice President Kamala Harris is calling Israel out.
The Israeli government must do more to significantly increase the flow of aid. No excuses.
And I think then gradually you have to look at the degree to which America's changing its tone, the way in which the British government's changing its tone. Lord Cameron put out a very tough statement, deeply critical of Israel and demanding an investigation into what had happened. And he repeated his demands in terms of how aid must be got into Gaza. And there's one very bold statistic, which is shaming for everyone, which is that in February, the number of aid trucks that got into Gaza had halved from the month before. And if you remember, we'd had this International Court of Justice ruling saying that aid must get into Gaza, and we'd had endless demands on the Israelis that they change their attitude to allowing aid into Gaza, but things have got worse.
Patrick, even if we accept the Israeli version of events, it still paints a picture of a population in Gaza, and especially northern Gaza, who are desperate, on the verge of starvation. I mean, people so hungry that they are potentially getting into a stampede over food. How big a problem is hunger in Gaza right now?
Well, it's a silent killer, starvation, but 15 people have been recorded as having died from starvation already. And starvation can accumulate very, very quickly.
My daughter has died. She passed away due to malnutrition. All vitamins and minerals dropped sharply in my daughter's body. With an accepting heart, all I can do is pray to God.
Some of the accounts of the Palestinians who went out at 4 a.m, remember they were leaving their houses at 2, 3 a.m, on the rumor that it was an aid truck passing by. They said that they had seen no food or aid for as many as 5 days, and their children are literally on the brink of starvation. So there's absolute desperation.
What has already happened to us is more than enough. We went to get flour for children. We have been eating animal feed for 2 months, and even that ran out. What are we supposed to do? Where are we supposed to go?
The difficulty is, I think, all the UN agencies have said everything they could have said about what they feared was going to happen. And they've run out of words. They've run out of warnings. They feel they've not only cried wolf, but the wolf is at the door.
I mean, in the face of this level of hunger, it seems like it would be so easy to just get food into there. But logistically, what are the challenges to getting the food that is so desperately needed into Gaza?
No, it's intriguing because I often find myself asking UN agencies and others, what are the problems? And they really accumulate. One is there's just not enough crossings. There should be a crossing further north into northern Gaza, and that's not been allowed. For a while, the Kerem Shalom crossing was blocked by protesters because there's groups of Israelis who feel passionately that aid should not go into Gaza. They feel that's only lengthening the war, putting Israeli soldiers at risk and strengthening Hamas. And then there are what the British government describes as sort of bureaucratic hurdles, which are very stringent tests as to what aid can go through. So flash lights are not allowed through. So whole trucks are checked very laboriously. And if there's only one or two items in the truck that the Israelis feel shouldn't go through, that truck then goes to the back of the queue. So those are the kinds of problems they're facing. But most aid agencies now say the real problem is that even if they can get trucks through, it's simply too dangerous to distribute the food. And that's why the UN has not been distributing food to northern Gaza for many weeks.
This is what desperation looks like. Thousands of men whose families are going hungry clambered onto trucks delivering food to Zeytun in Gaza City today. The Israeli Defense Forces have targeted Hamas police, so there's no one to maintain civil order. Aid officials say that by preventing enough food from getting through, Israel has caused both hunger and chaos.
There is no civil order. There's no police force. The police have largely retreated because they feel they're going to be attacked by Israeli Air Force. Hamas is not operating there either, and Israel's not operating there. So it's a sort of lawless starvation area.
I mean, the food that does get in there, that very little food that does, what happens to it? How is it distributed? Does it get to the people who need it most desperately?
Well, I think because, as I say, the law and order is breaking down in large parts of Gaza, the distribution networks that the UN ran and the distribution centers that they used to have are not operating in the way they are.
Today, a US State Department spokesman said that they understood that criminal gangs were seizing what little food there was and monetizing it, selling it, because that's what happens in this kind of situation.
So now it's a sort of first come, first serve, people grabbing what they can, thinking about their families, and there's no orderly distribution. It's said that in those circumstances, the people who are going to get the aid are young men, and those can often be Hamas supporters. I mean, people with the guns are probably going to get aid before others. In an odd way, this is certainly what I hear Western diplomats say to Israelis, you are creating an aid distribution network which is benefiting Hamas, which is the opposite of what you want to achieve.
It sounds like there are many challenges to getting this food into Gaza, but is it fair to say they are ultimately political and military? This is the Israelis choosing to either block aid or make it really difficult for that aid to get in.
Yes, well, my difference, say, with Lord Cameron, who I think on some issues has been very good on this. But on this particular point, I feel he's been treating this as a series of bureaucratic hurdles that need to be overcome, as though there are sort of administrative issues and blockages that are just in the way. And if men of goodwill come together, they can be sorted out. And I just think he is not describing the reality, which is this as a deliberate policy by Israel not to feed the people of Gaza to the extent that is required. And that's because they want to do that, because they want to win a war and they think it is part of a war.
People in Gaza right now are starving to death, and you're not letting enough aid trucks reach those people in need.
First of all, people are not starving to death in Gaza.
Well, right, the UN says they are.
I beg to differ. At any rate, Israel is enabling thousands of trucks to get into Gaza.
Now, no one's ever going to want to say that, neither the British or the Israelis, because to use food as a weapon in war is a war crime. And I don't think the British government wants to go there. So they imply things, but they won't state things. And I was struck yesterday that the chair of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, who has taken this evidence from Lord Cameron, said there is a lack of clarity of thought in the Foreign Office, and that they have to say that war crimes are being committed. And again, there's a consequence to that, which is that you would then have to stop supplying arms to Israel. I think that's the real bureaucratic blockage, is that the consequence of naming what's going on is too difficult for the Foreign Office and American government to face up to.
Patrick, maybe the country with the most influence over the Israelis at the moment is the US. Up till now, how much pressure has the Biden administration been putting on Benjamin Netanyahu to increase aid to Gaza?
Well, there's been degrees of pressure. It doesn't take more than a minute to find another story in an American newspaper that says Joe Biden is losing his patience with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. But after a while, those stories begin to sort of sag in their significance, because the problem is there's been so little change in Israeli policy. So ultimately, you get these moments such as Kamala Harris saying there must be a ceasefire, no more excuses.
And given the immense scale of suffering in Gaza, there must be an immediate ceasefire. Yeah! For at least the next 6 weeks, which is what is currently on the table.
She says it with slightly more vim and verve than the president, but it's also that she says it as part of the American presidential election campaign with one eye on how Arab and Black voters might be responding to what's been happening in Israel. And you just feel that then you look again at a US State Department press briefing where some of these issues are dragged out in greater detail. And there really is no change in the policy. The policy remains. And certainly there's no suggestion that if Israel doesn't comply, there will be any sanctions in terms of withdrawal of arms. And ultimately that is the sanction that Israel knows America has. And I fear they know America's not going to use.
In the face of such a stark situation and unable to move Netanyahu to let more aid into Gaza, what kinds of things are the Americans considering doing to try to ease the desperation there?
Well, very soon after this large number of people being killed, more than 100 being killed at this flour distribution point in northern Gaza, suddenly the Americans started briefing that they were talking about air aid drops. Now, this has been something that's been discussed inside the administration for a long, long time.
And for the first time, the U.S. carried out airdrops into Gaza this weekend, delivering meals for those affected by the war.
Aid agencies are not opposed to them in principle, but they say it's a sign of American weakness that you're having to do this. One aid drop by one aeroplane is the equivalent of one truck. And the problem is only 100 trucks are going through, and they could get 500 trucks through a day. So it would be easier to deal with this aid issue, not via slightly performative air aid drops, but instead to do it through trucks and to put pressure on Israel to do so. It is an extraordinary thing that you're resorting to using air aid drops when your closest ally will not allow you to let aid through to people who are starving.
I mean, Patrick, we could end up in a situation where the Biden administration is providing the weapons that are being dropped on Gaza, while at the same time dropping aid on those same people.
Yes, I mean, there's many cartoons you can already see which have parachutes, and one of the parachutes has a bomb, and the next parachute alongside has an aid pallet. It's contradictory, to say the least. But this policy ultimately is very much being driven from the White House. And I think Joe Biden, for all the allegations that he's not all there, he's all there on this issue, and he has very strong views about what should happen, and he's not going to change them.
Coming up, will there be a ceasefire anytime soon? And what will it mean for people on the ground?
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
In Norway, a woman's boyfriend forgets who she is overnight. In Detroit, a man is arrested, but he was never at the crime scene. In Spain, disturbing pictures of young girls have appeared, and no one knows who's behind them. Something strange is happening. A collision between people and artificial intelligence. Discover more in The Guardian's new series, Black Box. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes Monday and Thursdays. Patrick, back in November, one of the conditions Hamas wanted for a week-long ceasefire was an increase in aid. We're talking to you again as talks are ongoing for another pause in fighting. What do we know about those talks?
Well, they've been going on for longer than expected, which is generally a good sign. There's a sense, which I don't know how real it is, that there's a deadline of Ramadan next week for them to be completed. And I think the two focus has been this issue of aid, the aid that would be distributed in the context of a ceasefire. And the second is the nature and proportion of Palestinian prisoners that would be released by the Israelis in return for the release of hostages. And I think it's always been absolutely the top of the Hamas agenda is to release the maximum number of Palestinian prisoners. And they are asking for some, what they regard as senior leaders to be released, and what Israel regards as terrorists who've got very long sentences around their necks and basically would not be released in their lifetime. So that's where the kernel of the negotiation is at the present.
Representatives of Hamas, the US and Qatar are in Egypt as part of attempts to agree a six-week ceasefire in Gaza.
But do you think the incident on Friday, the deaths of more than 100 people at that food aid distribution point, has made this ceasefire more likely or less likely to happen?
To be very brutal, I don't think it changes the calculus that much. I think from Hamas's point of view, these deaths are happening the whole time anyway. If there's any change in the calculus, it is maybe more pressure from America on Israel to accept that senior Palestinian commanders in jail must be released.
And if there is a ceasefire, how much relief will that bring to the people of Gaza? How quickly will the food they need start getting into the territory in the numbers in which it's needed?
I think it can be done quite quickly if there's a genuine ceasefire and there's goodwill. the reality is there's still people who I think may, it's going to be too late. They're going to die from starvation. And I still think there's people under the rubble who are dying as we speak. So it's not going to be immediate. It's not like flicking a switch and some people will have been permanently damaged by what's happened. I don't mean by the bombs, but I mean by the loss of food. So I'm not saying it would be nirvana in 5 days, but you can transform the situation very, very quickly as long as there's no fighting and there is some kind of civil order. And one of the problems is I'm not absolutely sure who would be in charge of Gaza during the ceasefire. Is it exclusively Israeli Defense Forces or is there a Palestinian police? Or can the UN, which in a way is the de facto authority inside Gaza, be able to reassemble itself and start to distribute aid in an effective way? There's a lot of questions still to be answered there.
I mean, I hesitate to ask this, but if there isn't a ceasefire, what happens to the people in Gaza who are hungry, desperate, and on the verge of starvation?
They become more hungry, they become more desperate, and more of them will die of starvation. I don't think there's any doubt about that. There is a difficulty because there has been so many warnings about what was going to happen and on the brink of famine, etc. But it's now here. I don't think it's any point denying it. And it's terrifying and I just find unbelievable in we are watching this happen. We're watching it on our screens every day and we're not doing enough to bring it to an end. It's just, I think it's shaming.
Patrick, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that was Patrick Wintour, The Guardian's diplomatic correspondent. For more of our Gaza coverage, our live blog of the war continues. It's updating all the time and you can find it at theguardian.com. Before we go, the third installment of Black Box, our new podcast series about the mysteries of AI, is out tomorrow. It's about a powerful AI app that falls into the hands of a bunch of boys in Spain who use it to create havoc. And we decide, can we find the people who made this app? It's a journey that leads us from Spain into the heart of London and all the way to Eastern Europe. The series is Black Box, and you can find it wherever you listen to Today in Focus. And that is it for today. This episode was produced by Sammy Kent. Sound design was by Solomon King. The executive producer was Phil Maynard. And we're back with you tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
How can a people-first approach to higher education transformation improve success? An EY report suggests that taking emotional and psychological factors into account is just as important as the technology. Six factors drive this human-centered approach: leadership, inspiration, care, empowerment, investment, and collaboration. Get these right, and they can more than double an organization's chance of transformation success. Learn more about people-first transformation at theguardian.com/transforminghighereducation. This message was paid for by EY.